This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evanpilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we both welcome you back to another edition of New World Next Week. Of course, you can find it at NewWorldNextWeek.com, and I think we have quite an interesting bit of stories put together for you this week. And of course, every week we go over some of the most important developments within alternative news and open source intelligence. And we'll begin with an article that I have posted to cyberspacewar.com that originally comes from the Associated Press. Power grid experiment could confuse electric clocks. A year-long experiment with America's electric grid could mess up traffic light security systems in some computers and make plug-in clocks and appliances like programmable coffee makers run up to 20 minutes fast. A lot of people are going to have things break, and they're not going to know why, said Dimitrios Matsakis, head of the Time Service Department at the U.S. Naval Observatory, one of two official timekeeping agencies in the federal government. Since 1930, electric clocks have kept time based on the rate of the electrical current that powers them. If the current slips off its usual rate, clocks run a little fast or a little slow. Power companies now take steps to correct it and keep the frequency of the current and the time as precise as possible. The group that oversees the U.S. power grid is proposing an experiment that would allow more frequency variation than it does now without corrections, according to a company presentation obtained by the Associated Press. Officials say they want to try this to make the power supply more reliable, save money, and reduce what may be needless efforts. The test is tentatively set to start in mid-July, but that could change. Tweaking the power grid's frequency is expensive and takes a lot of effort, said Joe McClelland, head of the electric reliability for the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Is anyone using the grid to keep track of time? McClelland said. Let's see if anyone complains if we eliminate it. No one's quite sure what will be affected. This won't change the clocks in cell phones, GPS, or even on computers, and it won't have anything to do with official U.S. time or internet time. But wall clocks and those on ovens and coffee makers, anything that flashes 12 when it loses power, may be just a bit off every second, and that error can grow with time. It's not easy figuring out what will run fast and what won't. For example, VCRs and DVRs that get their time from cable systems or the internet probably won't be affected, but those with clocks tied to the electric current will be off a bit, Matsakis said. This will be an interesting experiment to see how dependent our timekeeping is on the power grid, Matsakis said. So, James, I have a few related interesting pieces to kind of tie in with this, but even that Associated Press article kind of strikes me as even some of the language used, it's like, oh, it could mess up traffic lights, and this experiment will be interesting. It kind of has, you know, flippant language to it. But an idea I first heard from my friend Clyde Lewis of groundzeromedia.org ties into this, I see, and in the long term, these things aren't going to happen tomorrow. But there's talk of a 13-month calendar, as long as we're talking about time. And you can read about this on Wikipedia, seeking to equalize the length of each month in the year. It would basically be 52 weeks, creating 13 months of 28 days, 4 weeks, and 4 quarters of 91 days, or 13 weeks. Now, flashback, James, to March 13th of this year, 9.0 Japan earthquake shifted Earth on its axis and shortening the length of the days about 1.8 microseconds. Tie in with this, on the same exact day, out of the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, meet Ophiuchus, the new zodiac sign. I'm not sure if you remember this, James. This new sign, represented by a serpent tamer, was brought to light by a recent news report about how we've been observing zodiac signs incorrectly. Time changing. That's what all of these stories kind of tie into. What's your take on all of this?
Interesting. The 13-month idea is kind of bizarre. It reminds me of after the French Revolution. I believe the revolutionaries wanted to bring in metric time and change to 10-day weeks and all that kind of stuff. I mean, just bizarreness. So I equate it with tyranny. But anyway, it's an interesting story. And what's interesting to me about this is how it reveals yet another way in which we're safely nestled in the all-loving embrace of technology that regulates everything, every aspect of our lives, including our time, our daily schedule. It's something that I'd never actually really thought about. But yes, our electric clocks are actually keeping time based on the rate of the current going through them. I mean, that's something that would never have occurred to me. And to think of the idea of the rate being, you know, subject to change, and thus the clocks being off time. I mean, that's bizarre and something I'd never thought of. But just another aspect of how we are regulated by this technology around us, and how much we depend on it for almost everything we do. And it's, you know, it becomes more and more like some kind of science fiction fantasy every day about how, what happens when the clocks stop working, or the, you know, the technology starts going wonky. It's so it's just another aspect of that that all powerful, all pervasive technological embrace to me.
And I think hopefully throughout this year, 2011, I think we've been tracking some of these stories of these interesting tests coming up throughout the year, whether that's the test of the emergency broadcast system or this time change experiment. But I think you were maybe also kind of making a subtle reference to the new Adam Curtis documentary, All Watched Over by Machines of Loving Grace, which we'll also recommend right here. But now, James, let's move to our second story. And again, as I said, these stories, I believe, all kind of fit together quite well. And this comes from the Weather Channel. Scientists say California mega quake imminent. Like a steaming kettle with a top on, pressure is building beneath the surface of California that could unleash a monster earthquake at any time. That's according to a new study from the Scripps Institute of Oceanography. Geologists say Southern California is long overdue for a huge earthquake that could unleash widespread damage. It all comes down to the Salton Sea, which lies to the east of San Diego. The Salton Sea lies directly on the San Andreas Fault and covers more than 350 square miles. A big earthquake has hit the lake bed about every 180 years. But when officials started damming the Colorado River to reduce floods downstream, including the Salton Sea, the moderate earthquakes stopped for the Salton. Sounds like a good thing, right? Not necessarily. Seismologists think the damming stopped the moderate stress-relieving earthquakes on the Salton. Now they fear the pressure is building, and the area could be as many as 100 years overdue for a mega quake measuring 7.5 or larger. This sobering news comes just as a new poll is released that details Californians' fears about earthquakes and other natural disasters, showing that the natural disaster Californians most fear by 57% is earthquakes. But these findings of this imminent mega quake in California were published in the scientific journal Nature Geoscience. And we do have a couple links. They're not giving up the entire report for free, but you can get the basic breakdown from nature.com and also Scripps News. James.
Well, what to make of this story? I mean, I'm 31 years old, and I can't remember a time in my entire life where I haven't heard predictions of the big one in California. So I don't think this is necessarily entirely new. I mean, I haven't read the study, so granted, I'm speaking from a position of ignorance here, but again, I mean, I've heard this so many times throughout my entire life that this is just yet another prediction, and I'm sure one of these years they will be right and the big one will happen. And but again, why take this warning any more seriously than any of the literally hundreds that I've heard throughout my entire life, and I'm sure you've heard the same. So, but again, we have seen the instability in the tectonic plates shifting around the Ring of Fire, and it's been going down along the Pacific, obviously from the Japanese quake, and going down towards New Zealand. So it's going to come back up towards from Chile and up along the Pacific coast of the U.S. So one would imagine there will be some significant seismic activity in California probably sometime soon. Whether it will be the big one or not, I'm not sure, but yeah, it's a pretty scary time for people living in those areas, I guess.
It really is. And a lot of these stories do also seem to kind of tie in with something I'm not sure if we've discussed here or not, but that so many kind of different groups all basically have their sort of end times apocalyptic scenario, whether that's global warming or the rapture or any of those things. Each kind of sect is all, in a way, we're putting this energy out of saying, oh, it's the end times, oh, it's all coming down very soon. And that could be something we'll, of course, manifest, you know, ourselves. It'll be that self-fulfilling prophecy. And I even covered a story last week on holyhexes.com about a Dutch man building his own Noah's Ark replica, and they're also doing that here in the States, here in Kentucky, with state money, no less. But let's not go there right now and move to our third and final story from KMBC.com, and this is the only place I've been able to find this story out of Kansas City. Odd letter from CORE upsets property owners. Some say CORE flooded land to drive down prices. Some river bottom property owners say they received a letter from the Army Corps of Engineers Kansas City District Office asking them if they want to sell their land. K- KNBC's Michael Mahoney reported that the letter is angering some of the people who received it because some of them are fighting for their land from a flood they believe the Corps caused. The letter reads, quote, "The Corps is currently seeking willing sellers," end quote. It's part of a 15-year-old Corps plan to buy up river property or obtain easements. The Corps wants the property to enhance wildlife areas for species like the pallid sturgeon, an endangered fish the Corps considers when managing the river. But to some critics of the Corps, it proves their suspicions, and this just further proves the Corps is going after property just so they can save some endangered species, said Bruce Bierman, who received the letter from the Corps. "We clearly understand this may appear insensitive to some folks who are fighting the flood. It should not have gone out at this time, but it did," said Judd Canuvian of the Army Corps of Engineers. Canuvian said this may be a case of the right hand not knowing what the left hand was doing. But Mahoney reported that some people believe the Corps deliberately released massive amounts of water in hopes of driving down the sales price on flooded ground. "We'd never tie the two together. This has nothing to do with the Missouri River ecosystem," Canuvian said. The letter states this is part of a 1986 law that is aimed at replacing wildlife habitats that have been lost to things like construction, maintenance, and operation of the river system. The Corps is already catching lots of heat for the flooding, which it acknowledges is the result of its decision to release upstream water. The related story that we have from foodfreedom.wordpress.com: feds buying up farmland they flooded, and George Soros is in on it. Remember when the Army Corps blew up the Bird's Point levee in early May? Now we have a little more reason why. James?
Very interesting, isn't it? And excuse my ignorance, but again, I'm Canadian here in Japan, so I have no idea what really is the mission and purpose of the Army Corps of Engineers. I mean, are they supposed to be trying to balance ecosystems and protect wildlife species? Is that part of their mandate?
I believe so. And again, I'll play the ignorant American and say that I don't know enough about them right here and now. But that does seem to be their MO, and in a way it almost seems that they're sort of the shock troops of this sort of Agenda 21 kind of new sort of eugenics plan about basically taking over the land, taking the people off of it, outlawing anything that's natural, of course, that we can use to heal ourselves, whether that's hemp or superfoods or any other number of things, and taking that away. So yeah, in a way, they seem to kind of be the shock troops. So whenever there's, you know, levees blown mysteriously before floods or, you know, massive hurricanes and things, they seem to kind of have their finger in the sort of environmental industrial complex destruction, if you will.
Well, very interesting. And certainly if they are part of the Agenda 21 shock troops, as you say, well, then it does sort of go in line with all of that they're causing floods in order to decrease prices so they can buy up land. I mean, that, as we know, is what a lot of this phony environmentalism is about trying to buy up land and use it for their own purposes. And absolutely, it's a ridiculous story. So I certainly hope more people will start covering it. I mean, it sounds like a pretty important story in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. And again, this all relates to what we always have kind of said on this show, that so many of the stories come back to, you know, food being one of the foremost key issues to all of this. And of course, if we're talking about farmland, that's the food. That's the breadbasket of America.
That's right. All right. Well, so what do you have coming up for Media Monarchy this week?
Coming up this week, of course, going over this and other situations as, you know, we see nuclear plants across the country here in the States having bizarre events, and that's fires at Los Alamos and things happening in Virginia and I think even New Jersey, those things going on. And also, I believe, an interview with someone you spoke to just a few weeks ago, the real Plato, as he is on his, as he calls it, the first Bitcoin road trip. And he has landed here in Portland, and I think we're going to do kind of a quick interview in Portland here in just a little bit.
All right, excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to meeting Monarchy this week, as always. So, James Evan Pilato, thanks for joining us once again.
All right, man. Thank you. Take care.